Welcome to the Trend Detection Podcast, powered by Siemens.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Trend Detection Podcast. I'm really pleased to invite my colleague, Richard Eller, back on again. Not again in a bad way. That sounds like a bad thing, doesn't it? But no, I'm really pleased to have Richard back. And we're talking about a topic that regular listeners will see is recurring, because we're doing this regular series around the readiness for predictive maintenance in different regions all around the world. You might have seen a recent episode around India, and obviously today we're doing Australia. So really looking forward to the conversation. But I'll just hand over to Richard briefly, for a quick reminder of who you are for people who haven't listened to the podcast before.
Thank you very much, Niall, for the invite. I really do enjoy these sessions, and I do envy you in some way, where you're actually getting to hear from all of the regions with a very similar topic. You know, this is essentially what collaboration is about, is being able to pull the best from each region so that we don't reinvent the wheel. So, yeah, really appreciate this. And I've been listening to a couple of your sessions in the other regions, and it's really good to hear. And I think the knowledge shared is great. So thanks for that. A little bit about myself. Basically, very much customer focused, field service focused. Grew up kind of what we call the coal face, where doing instrumentation, automation, control, PLCs, drives, and in many different applications, but really cut my teeth in mining, process industries. In South Africa, also spent quite a bit of time in automation and control with Siemens, but primarily a lot of time here in Australia in mining and the renewable sector, where in mining, I worked in mobile mining applications where we have dragline shovels and haul trucks that are electric with diesel generation, and also in the renewable space where we actually use our drive technology as a STATCOM. We call it a static compensation unit, where you can use it to stabilize the voltage in a grid. So that's kind of where my main focus area is. But I am now really dialing in all of that expertise into the condition monitoring space and really helping our customers adopt the correct tool for where they are in their journey. And so I do cover quite a couple of tools here in Australia, but Sensei is definitely our strongest offering. And really excited to go through what's required and the readiness associated. Thank you, Niall.
Yeah, no, thank you, Richard, again for joining us. So let's dive straight in. And I guess when we talk about readiness, we've always talked about readiness at Sensei in terms of two different sides of the coin. So there's data readiness and there's a cultural readiness. But with those two things in mind, maybe you could just start us off by talking about sort of the current trends that you see in the Australian market around those two types of readiness.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about cultural readiness first, this is definitely the biggest challenge that we have. And this is for any new technologies or any technology that is going to change the status quo, do something different. And when we talk about condition monitoring, it's very traditional in its old ways. We are talking about people that have spent a lot of time analyzing data, getting people together from data scientists to application engineers and building algorithms to deduce value. And so basically this is the mindset that we are challenging at this stage, where we are bringing a new tool into the space where it actually can help those people come up with decisions faster and quicker. But understanding, adopting, and changing is tough, and especially with everything coming out so fast these days, there's a little bit of apprehension about everything. So it's quite a journey to take a customer from that first call through to this successful wins. And it is a good 3 to 6 month journey for a customer to go from what is Sensei to wow, Sensei is really helping me every day. So we are seeing that quite often now. And so that cultural change is basically our biggest challenge, but I think that's for any technology. And basically when it comes to readiness, I think this is getting better and better and better. With our hardware from all OEMs, they've realized that the connectivity and the open source connectivity is critical. So for Siemens, this is the accelerator project that they have as a North Star or as a guiding star, where all of their products now have to be able to have an open source communication to any device and not just restricted to the Siemens or specific protocols. And we are seeing this basically change the landscape quite a bit. So I think I was actually in a meeting recently where a customer was having very good success with Sensei, and basically the pilot and the proof of concept that they went through was, you know, I would say 25 times basically their expense. So the return on investment was very clear. But what made it very hard was the brownfield connectivity. So now you need to go and spend that additional expenditure on sensors and vibration sensors to really get the data out. And what's really changing in our space now is everything's coming connected. And so I reassured this customer, I said, we might be frustrated about brownfield connectivity, but in a couple of years' time, all equipment's going to be connected and your team is going to be enabled with Sensei already. They don't have to go down the connectivity journey. They don't have to do all of the stuff associated with connectivity. They understand the tool and they'll be able to deliver very, very quickly. So it is quite a journey. Maybe that was a little bit too much talking for one bit, but when it comes to cultural and readiness and adoption, this is a challenge, but it's a good challenge. This shouldn't be seen as a negative thing.
No, of course. And yeah. No, I think you've really set the scene there. And don't apologize for talking on the podcast. That's a very important part of it, of course. So, but I wanted to dive into that a bit. You talked about challenges. And would you say that the connectivity, I think you said it's improving, but the connectivity infrastructure side is still a challenge that customers need to overcome? Or is it not? There's a common concern for customers, let's say, when talking about predictive maintenance?
Yeah, because all plants are different. You might, but a very generic plant would have scattered OEM supplied equipment all over their factory. So each OEM supplier might have their own supplier of, they might have Siemens, they might have a third party a device in there. So when it comes to integrating all of this, because that's where the real value sits. The value sits in enterprise data. We don't want to focus just on 10 assets. That is great for smaller applications where your goal is very much defined to those 10 motors. But when you are really talking about big savings, when you are talking about a really technology adoption and change, you want to do it at an enterprise level. And this is why that connectivity is such a challenge, because many sites have different protocols, they have different OEMs, but I can see over the next 5 years, this becoming a lot less of an issue for greenfield sites. I think it'll be pretty stock standard. Our customers are asking for all of our devices to be edge enabled on greenfield applications. And that's the right thing to do. The challenges are when we go into some applications where, you know, the equipment is 50 to 60 years old and they can't replace that equipment. So you have to go and install additional vibration sensors to protect that equipment because you want the longevity on it. And so this is the real challenge that we have is in the real space where you've got really old aging assets that you can't replace, you have to maintain. And that's where our biggest challenge sits, but also the biggest opportunity for predictive maintenance specifically and value.
And would you say that predictive maintenance in general is becoming more, I think in general, you know, maybe as a global view, it's becoming more, you know, an accepted term, it's becoming more popular and people are, it's almost a buzzword, you'd probably call it that. Would you describe it as a similar sort of direction in Australia as well? It's starting to take off as a concept?
Yeah, look, I think the word predictive maintenance has been used for a very long time, but maybe not very accurately. I think it's been very much targeted towards condition monitoring, rules-based predictive maintenance. So this is taking application knowledge, data scientists, programmers, building an algorithm and predicting something that you know can happen based on insights derived. But I think we are seeing a shift in what predictive maintenance actually is. But in most of the calls that I have with our customers, their understanding of predictive maintenance at the beginning of the call is completely different to the understanding of predictive maintenance at the end of the call. And it's mainly because we come from this condition-based rules, whereas, you know, Sensei works differently and really works on a deviation from the norm and is not truly based on the rules of condition monitoring and that. And that's kind of, there's quite a bit of education around that. And another thing that I have seen, because AI has been out for some time, and we are talking about AI in industry, and one of the things that I do see quite a lot of is when I mention AI for industry, a customer will think it is a model-based AI. They think of the traditional AI that you would go and purchase an algorithm for a 22-kilowatt motor in a pump application where somebody has dialed in a model specifically for that motor and that pump. And you know, there are business cases around this where you can purchase models based on assets, but this is not scalable. You know, what we have seen is that a 22-kilowatt motor in a sewerage works or in a Coca-Cola plant or in a iron ore processing plant, they are completely different applications and their behavior is slightly different. And that's why these traditional AI models don't actually work for scaling. They're fine for one or two things, but I really challenge that when it comes to scalability, when you really want to roll AI out for your entire process plant. And that's what Sensei does very, very well. It's little bit application agnostic, but really does find that deviation from the norm quite well. And so So when we talk about AI, the adoption of AI, and also understanding of what predictive maintenance, there's a lot to break down there. To answer your question is, I don't think there's a very clear understanding of what predictive maintenance is at this stage. I think maybe there'll be another word with P coming out soon. I don't know, something between prescriptive, predictive, preventative, something else will come out, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. I think there's always the next sort of trend in the market. Pardon the pun on the name of the podcast, but if there's misunderstanding about predictive maintenance, what it is, and you've said it has to be sort of explained a lot. I think that's probably because of, I see a lot of, tools saying they do predictive maintenance when they probably don't at all. There's a lot of tools that say they have AI capabilities when they don't. But I guess, is there also is there a bit of education required on the sort of outcomes you can potentially achieve with a tool like Sensei, for example, where downtime is obviously one thing, but there's many other benefits as well. Is that something that's often misunderstood?
Yeah, agreed. I think there is quite a lot of education around why Sensei is not just predictive maintenance. It's one thing to have a technical tool, but it's another thing to have a technical tool that can be adopted by operators in the front end. All right. So Siemens are very good at writing software packages that are brilliant, but they're normally targeted for engineers. All right. I'm talking about your software suites and very high-end automation tools. They are traditionally designed for engineers. And the beauty of Sensei is, yes, it's got all of the AI built in, but the end product, the front end that an operator is using, is as simple as a case raised, drill down to the why the case is raised with a severity. And that's as simple as it gets for the front end. And feeding that back in is obviously what basically feeds the engine. But it's important to have a tool that is smart in the back end, but very easy on the front end. This is, for me, the holy grail of software, is a very powerful back end with an intuitive GUI. So this is what I think Sensei have done very well. Something that I've also seen with Sensei is they listen very well to their customers. When a customer actually is frustrated with something, or they give some feedback, it's within usually a week that Sensei will actually come back to that statement and say, listen, we identified this, we found this, and we've addressed it. And I understand, Sensei was a company prior to the Siemens acquisition. And I've been with Siemens in Australia for 18 years. And I was very interested to see how this adoption would go of a customer, of a tool and a software package that was so dialed into its customers, and how that would get adopted into Siemens. And I think it's since I have done very well to maintain their autonomy and that front end interaction where the loops gets closed very, very quickly. There's quite a bit to it when it comes to that education, that adoption, and the differentiation between AI and the anomaly detection that I can buy out of a box versus the anomaly detection that you get with Sensei, and the confidence factor that you get with a case raise. So I think for AI and I think Sensei is sitting at about 80% accuracy at the moment at a case raised. When you talk about traditional alarm triaging and alarm monitoring and filtration, if you're looking at an 80% accuracy on a true case, I think that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. And we, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, the product teams, delivery teams are very, you know, still very close to, I mean, delivery teams, obviously, but product team even talk regularly to customers, get feedback and how can we improve and, you know, make your lives easier. So that's definitely part of the, you know, it's still happening now. We're Siemens as well. I know we're short on time today, so I wanted to, before we finish, just discuss, because we can, and we've got a public case study about them, so BlueScope Steel, because when we're talking about cultural and readiness for predictive maintenance, they're a very special case in a very positive way. So I wondered if you could say a few words about BlueScope Steel, Richard.
Yeah, no problem at all. I feel very honored and privileged to be associated, to be honest, with BlueScope, because they are really leading the way in digital transformation. And this is not just on Sensei. I've sat down with their team and I've listened to their entire portfolio of how they want to transform, how they want to adopt digital transformation. And this goes from paperless to augmented reality training, to work instructions, to ERPs, to smarter maintenance, predictive maintenance. And they have really basically created a digital transformation team. And that's basically the ember that I would call it within that group, so that they can keep that transformation burning. And what we've really seen is, as they start pushing out the solutions within their own company, this is something that I found very interesting, is I find it hard for customers to adopt some technologies. But what I found with BlueScope is BlueScope are finding their own employees to find it hard to adopt new technology. So this is not just a business-to-business thing. This is very much ingrained in our beings with adopting new technology. But with BlueScope, they've done it correctly from the beginning. And maybe I'll just touch on very quickly a couple of the key areas that they have that's important for sustained adoption. And so in that group, they've got a great leader, but also a leadership commitment that provides that vision. I've spoken to these guys, and they are advocates, and they are really painting the picture for high-level management as to what they are trying to achieve at the ground. And this is so important, because usually people on the ground are very excited about their technology, but the people at the top are signing the checks and they're paying the bills. And it's important to have them on board. And then you also have to have engagement. You have to make sure that you aren't just a proof of concept in the corner somewhere. You have to really constantly reach out and engage and make sure that whatever you are doing is spreading. And there is quite a skill set required to get that across. Another key aspect of it is strategic. You've got to be smart in your goals. You've got to be, you know, I'm not going to talk about the smart goals, but you've got to be quite strategic in what you want to do. Specify your goals, measure them and go for them. And that's quite important. And all of this is data-driven. And usually the data-driven guys, girls, are not the same as the visionaries and the leaders. And so you've got to bring all of these people together. And I might just finish on this last one, but it's a very important one too, is flexibility. What you start out in the beginning is not what you're going to end up doing in the end. And it's important to be flexible. So for example, Sensei for BlueScope set out to do vibration monitoring and all of these big things, but they are actually pulling out great value in simple measures like the number of starts on a pump. That is a simple measure. And they've seen that by measuring just the number of starts, they can actually quickly detect if something is deviating. And maybe this is something that we can expand on in the next one, is these different roles required from top to bottom. I don't like to use that word, but it is hierarchy based and it's usually top to bottom, but it's important to have those measures and buy-in from all of those people. And BlueScope have done that well. And that's why, to be honest, I'm proud to be associated with them and support them on their journey. I think they're a great use case for anybody and any company that wants to actually transform.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I've sat in a few, I interviewed BlueScope people for our case study, and I've listened into product set those sessions I'll talk about where there's feedback between product team and customer, and you can just really see the passion, and some of the stuff they're doing is amazing, really amazing stuff. So yeah, real flag bearer for us. But I know we're out of time. As you mentioned, Richard, you're a regular on the podcast, and it's great to have you on here. I've noted down, we'll talk about the roles in predictive maintenance. That is something we haven't covered in depth on a set podcast, so I'll hold you to that invite. But for now, unless there's anything else you want to add, we can leave it there. But thank you again for taking the time to sort of take part and educate our audience a little bit.
Thank you very much, Niall.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you, everyone, for listening. See you on the next episode.
Please like and subscribe on all major podcast channels and find out more about Sensei Predictive Maintenance at Siemens.com.